Ryan Reynolds here for, I guess, my 100th Mint commercial. No, don't. I mean, honestly, when I started this, I thought I'd only have to do like 4 of these. I mean, it's unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month. How are there still people paying 2 or 3 times that much? I'm sorry, I shouldn't be victim blaming here. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/save. Whenever you're ready.
$45 upfront payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Exciting time, exciting summer. So glad you're here. This hour, we're going to be joined by Senator Tom Cotton. He's on the Armed Services. He's also one of the best surrogate Donald Trump has in terms of conservative values, conservative issues, and, of course, foreign policy. We'll discuss that. And Carly Shimkus has made her way to the studio. She's going to be on America's Newsroom shortly, but she told me privately this is the only thing she cares about. Like, the America's Newsroom, that's something to pass the time.
Well, I've been counting down the moments until I got an email from Allison inviting me back on your show.
Really?
So yesterday was my lucky day.
When did we lift the ban, Allison? Do you remember?
Yesterday.
It was yesterday. Okay, fantastic.
Well, thank God. I do have a show jingle.
You do?
Yeah, remember?
I know, but first let's get to the big three.
Okay.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You got half this or more of the 6th fleet sitting in the out there. Mm-hmm. And the Iranians have to ask, well, what's that for? Right. That Iran understands. They don't understand blah, blah, but they understand big aircraft carriers.
Yes, they do. Calm before the fury. Israel waits to see what type of attack Iran will attempt as they promise to respond for the killing of the Hamas leader in their capital. And could they have a preemptive attack? That's Israel. Could that be ready to go? And guess who's asking for Iran not to overreact? Russia.
Number two.
I'm not mad that she's not doing 15 interviews a day, but it can't last. It's very important. And we can't, you know, make favorites.
Right.
Anybody running for the top office needs to be as available as possible.
Day 18 of VP Harris's refusal to do any interviews at all, even with her running mate. Meanwhile, the American people need to know where all these candidates stand.
Number one.
We can do background checks. We can do CDC research. We can make sure we don't have reciprocal carry among states. And we can make sure that those weapons of war that I carried in war is the only place where those weapons are at.
Oops, I don't know if we could say that. Blowback, Governor Walz's cutting remarks about J.D. Vance's service got huge blowback when embellishments about his own service surfaced and backlash coming from the people he served with. I've seen this movie before, Carly, and it's called The Swift Boat Attack on John Kerry, who went to Vietnam, give him credit, but after tossed his medals and said he got wounded 6 times. And then people who served with him told a different story, and that ended up overwhelming his service.
Yeah.
Are we heading down the same direction?
I think so. He didn't need to embellish his military career. I mean, he served in the Army National
Guard
for 23, 24 years and leaving it at that. And I co-hosted with Joey Jones this morning, and I thought that the way he phrased it was so spot on, and I hadn't heard anybody say it this way, is that what Tim Walz really did was he would tell maybe like some form of the truth, but he would leave it up to people to fill in the blanks for themselves. Like, what he really did when he was overseas serving is he was in Europe,
Italy.
But when he said, yeah, he was in Italy. So when he said, I served overseas, I mean, when you're thinking about the war in Afghanistan, you're thinking, oh, he served in Afghanistan. So maybe he didn't tell complete fabrications or lies, but he left it up to people to fill in the blanks for themselves. And it's getting him into a lot of trouble right now.
Well, here's the thing. He said he was a higher rank than he was, and Kamala Harris read it. So why would she do that?
Yeah.
And if you have a good staff, they won't make mistakes like that. And they might say, hey, listen, this is your vulnerability. You're great. We love your service. Keep it general because you've had people attack you already that you serve with because you didn't go. Yeah. So don't bring it up. Instead, he attacks the 4 years that J.D. Vance spent in the Marines.
Know. Yeah.
So what do you say? And I'm a command sergeant. No, you're not a command sergeant. I didn't know this. Year and a half, you got to go to school, you got to go to academy, you got to pass a bunch of tests. And when your unit was asked to go, you say, no, I resign. I'm going to Congress. So that's a big deal because 3 people in his unit did die. And the other command sergeant had to take over.
Yeah, and the statement that the Minnesota National Guard released, we got in an email yesterday, there was a guest on Fox & Friends that said that it was very political. You know, like they were trying to defend him in a very political way. And they said that he resigned, say, it was in May, and they got their deployment orders in June or July. So people are left to believe, oh, okay, so I guess he resigned and, you know, went on to run for Congress before he found out that he was going to deploy. Well, that's not true. You find out that you're going to deploy about 24 months before you actually do. You just get your deployment date at that time. So he knew he was going to deploy. So the statement that's coming out in defense of him, there are also counterpoints to it.
Here is what Tim Walz said in 2007. Cut to.
I spent 24 years in the National Guard, some of that full time. I was an artilleryman. I deployed in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. My battalion provided base security throughout the European theater from Turkey to England in the early stages of the war in Afghanistan. And that same battalion is now in Iraq at this time.
So without him, that was what bothered them.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want to get involved in this, but if he keeps calling out other people, that's his issue.
Well, yeah.
And just when John Kerry said reporting for duty, sir, that opened up the door to go, really, what did you do in duty? And that brought scrutiny onto that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like during the when they were in Pennsylvania, wasn't he the one? It was him that said, J.D. Vance is like the JV version. Or maybe it was Kamala, like we're like the varsity.
Yes.
You look at the military experience and, you know, what J.D. Vance did versus Tim Walz. I mean, you shake your head. This shouldn't be a conversation, but now it is. And the people that are the most mad are people who served in the military.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. But again, if he wants to sit down and talk about it, it would be great.
That's the issue.
And he evidently is approachable. The other thing he didn't tell the truth about is not reading a teleprompter. I'm watching him give him addresses. We know that when someone's reading a teleprompter. This guy's reading a teleprompter. He said, the first time I read a teleprompter was on the stage. That's not true.
Yeah, that was a strange detail that
we
came
know
out.
That's
I think it's supposed
true.
To make him seem like hokey and like, oh, man, this is cool. Like he's, you know, Minnesota guy.
Right. Not really. Not so. So President Trump's going to give a press conference today at 2 o'clock, at which time he's being asked about how come he complimented Tim Walz for his handling of the George Floyd riots when we know he was terrible. He waited 3 days. The mayor has asked for the National Guard. He wouldn't give it. Mm-hmm. Then when he did it, and it was really too late. Half the city had burned down. And he said, in retrospect, I should have done something more. Trump came out and talked about that on our show. But do we have that tape of what they did is the recording of Donald Trump complimenting then-President Trump complimenting Tim Walz? Let's listen to 23.
And we spoke, and I fully agree with the way he handled it the last couple of days. I asked him to do that. Get a lot of men. We have all the men and women that you need, but people aren't calling them up. You have to dominate. If you don't dominate, you're wasting your time. They're going to run over you. You're going to look like a bunch of jerks. You have to dominate. So the best example, I alluded to it a couple of seconds ago, is Minneapolis. It was incredible. What happened in the state of Minnesota? They were a laughing stock all over the world. They took over the police department. The police were running down the street, sirens blazing, the rest of them running. It was on camera. And then they wiped out. You probably have to build a new one, but I've never seen anything like it. And the whole world was laughing. 2 days, 3 days later, I spoke to the governor. The governor is, I think, on the call, and he's an excellent guy. And all of a sudden, and I said, you got to use the National Guard in big numbers. They didn't at first, then they did. And I'll tell you that, I don't know what it was. It was, governor, it was the third night, fourth night. Those guys walked through that stuff like it was butter. They walked right through. And you haven't had any problems since. I mean, they know. They're not going to go there. Now they'll go to some other place. But once you called out and you dominated, you took the worst place and you made it. They didn't even cover it last night because there was so little action.
Well, he's trying to be nice, but he's saying you waited 3 days. You got to dominate.
Yeah, there's nothing controversial about that. I mean,
that was the first time I was hearing that.
Okay, well, interesting, because when Trump was on Fox and Friends yesterday, he kind of talked about this. And do you have the clip?
22.
Okay.
I was in the White House. He said, if you would put out the word that I'm a good person, And I did. I put out the word. I said, he's a good person. I hope everything's good. And everybody put down their flags and took their flags with them. But they took their American flags and their MAGA flags and they left. It was thousands of people. And that was the first time I said, wow, that's very interesting. And he called me back and he thanked me very much. That's my only thing I ever had to do with him. He's a very, very liberal man. And he's a shocking pick, and I'm thrilled. I could not be more thrilled.
So, I mean, what he's trying to say is for 3 days, dominate.
Yeah.
Instead of just going, where were you for 2 days? He's like, now go dominate, and you cut right through him.
Yeah, exactly. And that seems like the way that Donald Trump handles things. If he has one-on-one conversations with people, and Tim Walz called him and said, hey, listen, there's people outside my house. I'd really appreciate it if you told them to go. And, you know, Trump said, okay. And then they had a personal conversation, so he wanted to give him a bit of a shout-out during that call that you just played. That doesn't surprise me at all, but his overarching point was your city was on fire, and something needed to happen, and it needed to happen sooner. I can't believe – if you think about what 3 days – I mean, imagine being a small business owner and just waiting and wondering if your life's work is going to go up in flames, and there's nobody there to help out.
40% haven't come back.
Yeah.
So it's only 6 of 10 are still there.
3 people died. That's not leadership. And
it's absolutely. We remember that. We covered that. We were
here.
So that's true. What time do you got to be on America's Newsroom?
That's a 9:40. I'm good on time.
Are you good?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I want to talk about this. Donald Trump's going to have a press conference at 2 o'clock today. I think J.D. Vance should do the same thing. Nonstop. It's the only thing you can do to kind of almost badger them into sitting down and talking about their policies. I have no idea what they're going to do, but Kamala Harris coming out saying, my focus is going to be on prices, food prices. What are you talking about?
I love that.
You're Vice President.
My day one priority as President of the United States will be to get the economy back on track. Like, who's going to tell her that she's currently the Vice President in a position of power? Like, are you pausing for dramatic effect? Just by all means, if you have the solution, let us all know now.
Right. Here's what her saying that. Cut 17.
Because while our economy is doing well by many measures, prices for everyday things like groceries are still too high. You know it and I know it. You know, when I was Attorney General, I went after price fixing schemes. And when I am president, it will be a day one priority to fight to bring down prices.
There you go. That's the problem, grocery store owners.
Well, okay, so the top three issues, everybody knows this, it's the economy is number one, and then it's the border, and then it's abortion. But then I was surprised to see this poll, I believe it was a Marist poll, that showed that people trust Donald Trump more on the economy. This is swing state voters. They trust him more on the economy, but only by 3 points. And he was up by 9 against Joe Biden. So that means that that there are a lot of people who don't see Kamala Harris as a double down on the current economic policies. That's why she's not doing the interviews. Why would she? It would only hurt her because then she'd get the hard questions.
Here is what happened yesterday when she was speaking in Detroit. Cut 15.
I'm here because we believe in democracy. Everyone's voice matters, but I am speaking now. I am speaking now.
So she tried to shoot down the protesters who are pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian.
Yeah, can you believe some people don't think that she is pro-Palestinian slash Hamas enough?
Yes, I do believe, yeah.
Well, she talked to the uncommitted people. Did you know that? She and they met with the uncommitted Democrats, the pro-Palestinians. And she said that she expressed her sympathies and openness to a meeting with uncommitted leaders to discuss an arms embargo to Israel.
Right. You know it's going to be worse. Just so you know.
Oh, it will be worse.
If you are Jewish or you're pro-Israel, just know that if you vote for that side of the ticket, you are going to have a very anti-Israeli. And that might be the future of the Democratic Party, period, instead of just an element of the party, period. But that might be the future of the party. So maybe get used to it. So you only have one party that doesn't get most of the Jewish votes in America pushing for Israel. They want to say Netanyahu's the bad guy. I'm pretty sure people can see that he's not. Anybody who wants to put any time in knows Iran is the problem. Israel is not enemies with Oman, not enemies with Qatar, not enemies with Egypt or Jordan, or Bahrain, or Morocco, putting peace deals with all of them, Saudi Arabia. The problem is Iran.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, no, it's true. And you know, if Kamala Harris wants to go down this road of, you know, being so pro-Palestinian that she's willing to meet with these uncommitted movement and, you know, say, I see you and I hear you to the hecklers at her rally, that's fine. But to her own demise, I mean, we just saw the polling in New York that came out where there are more Jewish voters now supporting Donald Trump than Kamala Harris. So I'm surprised that it didn't happen sooner, but there are Jewish Democrats who are saying enough is enough. We're going to switch. Sides.
All right. Do you stick around for another segment?
Sure.
Okay, good. We'll do. We'll talk more when we get back. We'll go inside the Mets and find out. No, I'm kidding.
No, Will, I'm a linebackers coach, according to you. Earlier in the show, you said that.
It's going to make sense in a moment. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The other thing is look, the Israelis already have said they don't want a war. They did a very surgical, very strategic, very proportional strike. If the Israelis wanted a fight, they would have unloaded on these guys. And the third thing is you have to look at it. This is not a free lunch. Hamas has 10 times the military of Hezbollah. Has got 10 times the military of Hamas. If they wanted to pick a war, they probably should have done that when Israel was bogged down in Gaza. They're not now. So they're going to get the full force of that retaliation. Lebanon's a basket case. That country's going to fall apart if a war starts.
Retired Army Lieutenant Colonel James Carafano is a terror expert weighing in on what the stakes are after the killing of three leading terrorists, one in Hamas, one Hezbollah. And the other, the guy who's running Hamas, was killed in Tehran, and they take it as a personal affront. So they promise to attack. And they say, we don't care how many civilians are killed. But you know who cares, Carly? Russia. Russia is urging Tehran to have a measured response, if any response at all. Meanwhile, they're telling Russia, we need some aircraft, and we need you. You know, they're giving all of them the drones over to Russia. They want these Su-35s, and Russia has not given it to them yet. Putin says, Iran, I don't want you to hit civilians. Where's that coming
wow,
from?
Okay.
We know what they did in Syria?
Yeah. That must have to do, I guess, with oil prices. That's why Putin is urging Iran for a measured response.
But they high oil prices, and they pay more for the barrel for Russian oil.
Unrest would lead maybe sanctions. Maybe they're worried about that. I don't know what the angle is. That's the first time I'm hearing of it. But there's got to be some strange angle for him to urge Iran for a measured response. They're usually on the same page.
In Gaza, now that Sinwar is the new leader of the military and political wing, they say that they're now really heating up the hunt for him in Gaza. I mean, they killed another commander again.
Well, yeah, and one of the ways that they can is because it's the dead of summer in Israel, and so they're coming out of the tunnels because it's so hot down there, and that's how they're starting to kill these high-level guys that are still in Gaza. So he's living in the tunnels right now. And the fact that he's been named the government leader
of
Hamas—
Does he get to go to a Qatar and live in a Four Seasons?
It doesn't really matter. He was already the leader of Hamas.
You know
anyway.
What it does say is that evidently with the Sunni, Hamas is Sunni, Shia famously Iran, there's always been a little bit of distrust between them, but now it's Sinwar. Sinwar said, they say when he is so tight with Iran that this will bring the organizations closer. So anyone who thinks you can put a piece of paper between them is wrong. Carly, we can't wait to see you on television.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. I'll be right over.
All right. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. Sounds good.
And you do coach the linebackers in various high school
all linebackers of America.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What bothers me about Tim Walz is the stolen valor garbage. Do not pretend to be something that you're not. And if he wants to criticize me for getting an Ivy League education, I'm proud of the fact that my mamaw supported me, that I was able to make something of myself. I'd be ashamed if I was him and I lied about my military service like he did.
Right. And when they say lied, say he was a command master sergeant, and he wasn't. And that was actually how he was introduced by Kamala Harris off the teleprompter, which means either the team was bad, you know, a bad coordination, or bad communication, or no one really did a thorough background check. I have a lot to talk to Senator Tom Cotton about, but of course he served in the infantry and also had an Ivy League education and also got his law degree on top of that, became a congressman and now a senator. And he joins us now. He's on services, intelligence. Senator, welcome back. What's your thought about Tim Walz's service and not being a command sergeant or being demoted because he didn't finish the academy to get his command sergeant and didn't go to Iraq?
Well, Brian, thanks for having me on. First off, I want to say that I respect Tim Walz's service of more than two decades to our country in uniform, as I know you also respect the service of all our veterans. But Tim Walz and his campaign have made inconsistent statements now about the nature of that service, and I think he deserves, or the American people deserve, some answer about it. You identified one. When Tim Walz was in the service, he was a master sergeant. He was, as the term is used, procced to command sergeant major while he was serving in a position of a command sergeant major, but he didn't complete the educational requirements for that and then submitted paperwork to retire as a command sergeant major, which was later rescinded and went back to master sergeant. You know, his campaign has said that he submitted his retirement papers before he knew his unit was deploying to Iraq. That's now been proven not to be the case. So I do think Tim Walz owes answers to the American people, but this is not the only thing he owes answers to. I mean, he has a very strange 35-year entanglement with the Chinese Communist Party, Brian. He's traveled there more than 30 times. They've underwritten those trips. He's taken kids there to expose them to communist propaganda. Apparently, he even got married or honeymooned there as well. And he's been consistently soft on China as a politician. And he's imported Chinese economic views to Minnesota as well. I mean, he said just the other day that one man's socialism is another man's neighborliness. So he owes the American people a lot of answers. But, you know, in the end, Brian, he is just the vice presidential nominee. Kamala Harris is the top of the ticket. And she's the one that really owes answers to the American people about her radical views and failed record. Mm-hmm. Yet more than 2 weeks on, she still has not answered a single question, Brian. And when is the mainstream media going to demand that Kamala Harris act like a normal presidential candidate and face the press and answer questions about her record and her views and her plan for America?
Senator, yeah, I want to get to that, too, because President Trump, not only has J.D. Vance taken questions over the last 2 days and been very good, by the way, he knows his stuff. And not only that, we have President Trump is going to do a press conference today at 2 at Mar-a-Lago. Just to finish up on this military background, because it's interesting, because I think that we have a recruiting problem. And at 17 years old from a Nebraska town, he decides to join the National Guard, inspired by his dad, perhaps. And he wants to make his life better. So he's able to use that GI Bill to go to college. And guess what? J.D. Vance did the same thing. He's from an impoverished background. He's trying to make a difference. He's trying to buck the trend. He gets into the Marines, use the GI Bill to go to college. That's what we should be selling to get people to join the military. That's a positive story. But just on this, being that he used his platform in front of 14,000 people to mock J.D. Vance, he kind of opened himself up. So when asked about why he got the wrong rank and he's being disingenuous about his service, the campaign came out with this statement. Walz left the National Guard in 2005 after 24 years. His unit was not given deployment orders to Iraq until July. He had put the retirement papers in 5 to 7 months prior to his retirement in May. Tom Behrens, who had to become the commanding sergeant of the unit, it lost three people in Iraq, said this, cut seven.
It is stolen valor. He's used the rank that he never achieved in order to advance his political career. He's done it for decades now, basically. I mean, maybe not decades, but damn close to it. I mean, he still says he's a retired command sergeant major to this day, and he's not. He uses rank of others to make it look like he's a better person than he is. He still does it even, you know, just however long ago.
And he went on to say he had to take the unit even though he didn't want to. He wanted to retire too, but he couldn't leave two commanders without it. So is this a worthy, do you think that people should pursue this answer and at least ask him what the deal is?
Well, it's one of many topics on which Kamala Harris and Tim Walz should sit down with the press and answer questions. Again, I respect Tim Walz's service, but his and his campaign's inconsistent statements about his service, I think, calls for answers to the American people. He could sit down with you, Brian. You know the military. You're very fair in these questions. He could sit down with Brett Baer on Special Report. He could sit down with Jake Tapper, another reporter on CNN that understands the military. I think the American people deserves answers about these inconsistent statements, just like they deserve answers about what Kamala Harris would do for this country.
No doubt about it. So President Trump, you can understand there's a little bit of frustration there because they're going against Biden. They totally changed. They got to reconfigure. Evidently, over the weekend, they renavigated the ship and the communications team's getting together. But there's 90 days left to define what you would be. You can understand the frustration of President Trump. But the thing you guys seem to have on your side are the issues: better economy, safer world, better on immigration. How do you get that word out?
Well, Kamala Harris can run, but she can't hide, Brian. They've kept her under wraps for more than 2 weeks, but we got 13 weeks left in this campaign. At some point, she's going to have to answer questions, hold a press conference, sit down and do a televised interview. I know the media is in the tank for Kamala Harris, but they can't simply allow her to blow them off for 13 weeks. And when she has to face the music, we know what's going to happen, Brian. Either she's going to serve up the kind of incomprehensible word salad for which she's become so rightly famous, or she's going to reveal herself once again to be a dangerous San Francisco liberal. Just look at the last time she ran for president. She promised to decriminalize illegal immigration, to give health insurance to illegals. While she's taking away your health insurance on the job, she wanted to ban fossil fuel production, ban gas-powered cars. She even wanted to ban plastic straws. And now she's chosen as a nominee the governor of Minnesota, who's trying to make his state in the image of California. He's raised taxes. He's turned it into a sanctuary state. He's given illegals driver's license and health insurance. This is the most far-left presidential ticket in American history. And the more people learn about Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, the less they're going to like about their plans for America.
And just for the record, there is one person on another channel that also thinks it's a problem. Here's Van Jones, Cut 30.
I'm not mad that she's not doing 15 interviews a day, but it can't last. It's very important, and we can't, you know, make favorites. Anybody running for the top office needs to be as available as possible.
So he's even saying it. So at one point, they got to do it. The other question is, Senator, if her issues, if this is what she believes and this is what she said, why not run on it? My feeling is they're going to change and they're going to take your side on a lot of issues. They're going to talk about the need to crack down on the border. They're going to talk about the need to bring down inflation. They're going to talk about the need to maybe crack down on sanctuary cities. Are people going to buy that?
Well, this is why it's so critical that she sit down for interviews. And Van Jones is right. I mean, she doesn't have to do 50 interviews a day, but just look at President Trump. He's holding a press conference today. He did an interview on your Fox show yesterday. He and J.D. Vance sat down with the joint interview, as is customary, once the presidential nominee picks the vice presidential nominee. And there's very simple questions. Kamala, Madam Vice President, when you last ran for president, you wanted to eliminate private health insurance on the job. You now say you don't. When did you change your views and why? And I think the American people will see that she doesn't have a serious explanation, that she's saying whatever she thinks is necessary to get elected. And that's why, as they get to know more about her and her views, the more poorly she's going to do.
So we understand that President Biden's going to be sitting down doing an interview. I guess one of the things he's saying is President Trump's never going to accept the election result. We'll see what happens. But right now we're in a dead heat. Do you feel as though the communication with the Trump team has been good? Obviously, you've played a key role. You're doing all the Sunday shows. It's just a different one every week. Has the communication with the Trump team been good?
Yes. Yeah, the president and I and his senior leaders speak routinely, as he does with many other Republicans who are out there helping to get him elected and help elect a Republican majority in Congress. I do want to point out one thing you just said, Brian. Even Joe Biden, who has been kept under wraps for more than 4 years, has gone out and done a sit-down television interview since Kamala Harris was gifted this nomination. If Joe Biden, of all people, can do a television interview, why can't Kamala Harris? It goes to show that the Democratic high command, which has launched a hostile takeover of the Biden-Harris campaign, installing old Obama advisors like David Plouffe, who's a very capable political operative, know that she is unprepared to be president.
So a couple of things just on foreign affairs. The J.D. Vance, I'm very impressed with the way he can answer these questions. But on foreign policy, I don't think he personally sees the worthiness of backing Ukraine. Do you worry about that at all?
Well, I think what J.D. has explained is that he's very worried about our ability to support both Ukraine and Israel while we defend ourselves and our other friends in places like Taiwan and the Western Pacific. And he's right about that. This is part of a broader theme that he's advocated for many years, which is rebuilding America's manufacturing base to include foremost our defense industry. Now, I think the way to do that is to accelerate even more the money we're investing in our defense industry and building the skilled workforce that, you know, that we need in places like the Highland Industrial Park in South Arkansas or our shipbuilding sites in places like Maine and Mississippi. But J.D.'s right that we, for too long, especially under Democratic administrations like the Biden-Harris administration, have allowed our defense industry to atrophy, and we've got to reverse that immediately. Mm-hmm. President Trump will do that if he wins.
Now, you've seen the Mark Levin list that he was able to get, and all the weapons we are slow walking to Israel. That's what you have green-lighted from Congress, to give them the arms they need to be successful. What, are your hands tied? If the administration can actually do this, circumvent the will of Congress?
Well, they're playing all kinds of bureaucratic games, Brian, to say they're not doing that. There's this, that, and the other procedural step that has to start before the administration is on the clock to deliver these weapons. That's why they say they're not delaying anything. But as our investigation has proved, they're delaying not just big bombs, which, by the way, Israel does need because of the deep buried tunnels in Gaza, but everything from tank rounds to mortar shells to vehicles to aircraft. And you saw last night what would happen if Kamala Harris became president. She was confronted by pro-Hamas radicals in a rally, and she met with them, and she hinted that she would be open to a total arms embargo on Israel to force them to back down and surrender to Iran and its terrorist proxies like Hamas and Hezbollah around the region. If you care about our national security and our allies like Israel, and you think Joe Biden has been bad, the worst is yet to come if Kamala Harris becomes president.
There's no question. And now I just want to get you to the actual what's happening over there. Sinwar now ascends. He takes over Hamas, the military and political wing. And one of the things, the reason he got it is because he has has promised allegiance to Iran. And, you know, the Hamas is Sunni. There's always been a little bit of tension with Iran. They're Shia. But he's going to bridge that gap. This is something in our interest to let Israel wipe them out. If they remain intact at all, we're going to be right back down this road in 8 months. Why are they having a hard time explaining that?
Well, Joe Biden and especially Kamala Harris have put more pressure on Israel than on Iran and Hamas from the very beginning. I mean, if you needed any more evidence, Hamas just gave you more evidence by elevating Yahya Sinwar, the military commander inside of Gaza, also believed to be its political leader, a man who rebuilt Hamas's ties to Iran when they were strained a few years back. And Kamala Harris and Joe Biden seem to think it's just A-OK to have this bloodthirsty terrorist who is the mastermind of the worst atrocity against Jews since the Holocaust in charge of territory on Israel's border where they can launch another attack from it, just like they think it's OK for Hezbollah, another Iranian-backed terrorist group in Lebanon, to fire missiles into Israel and blow kids to pieces when they're playing ball on playgrounds. What we should have done, what we did when President Trump was president, was back Israel to the hilt, defeat its enemies quickly, and restore peace and stability in the region.
Understood. Lastly, it looks like our guy, we got seven guys wounded, two have been jettisoned out of Iraq for additional care, I believe, in Germany. We have not hit back after getting hit in Iraq. Don't you think that's a disturbing message, our lack of action?
Well, it's the message that we've sent to Iran now for 4 years under Joe Biden. There's something like more than 80 or maybe even more than 100 attacks on American troops in Iraq, and we've only hit back maybe a dozen times or so. That's not a very good ratio. And what it tells Iran and its terrorist proxies in places like Iraq, that you can shoot at Americans, you can harm Americans, maybe even kill Americans, and all we'll do is the smallest pinprick retaliation, because Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are scared of their own shadow. They don't have the strength and confidence to lead this nation in a dangerous world.
Yeah, you do. Senator Tom Cotton, thanks so much. Do you know what Sunday show booked you this week?
I think I'm going to be on with Shannon on Fox News Sunday.
She's a terror. She's going to tear you up. Bring your A game. Don't go partying Saturday.
Well, she's an outstanding journalist. And again, I'm sure she'd be very happily to host Kamala Harris if she wanted to sit down.
And she will at some point. Let's hope. She's great. Senator Tom Cotton, thank you. All right, when we come back, I'll be able to take some of your calls and talk about this and talk about what's happening with, and maybe preview, Donald Trump's press conference today. You'll listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Can I read you one thing that was in the New York Times that I just find so hilarious? So all this coverage of her is so fawning about her cooking and her going to restaurants. So this is from the New York Times story about the buddy-buddy relationship between her and the vice president. Ms. Harris, a black woman in the unrelenting spotlight of national politics, wears broad-shouldered suits, pearls, and heels, sometimes crisp chucks. She marshals an arched brow, a studied hand flip, carefully curated sentences. Her wave is controlled, her eyes always fixed on a distant point, her movements smooth. That's like from a poetry contest sponsored by the DNC about why do you love Vice President Harris. That's in the New York Times. They have never written a paragraph like that about Donald Trump.
That's Mark Halperin, right?
That is good ears.
Very, very interesting. I mean, I didn't hear that. I mean, I know he's everywhere conducting a lot of these insider stories, but it's a joke.
I mean, that it did. It sounded like poetry. It was crazy.
But it's not a column. It's reporting.
I know.
Right?
It's not.
It's not like, hey, this is my opinion and that's why you hired me. No, this is a reporter who's supposed to talk about and put in perspective what's happening.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But that's what, you know, if you're Trump, expect it. You still have to overcome it and you have a lot to go on.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. We have a lot going on here in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country and around the world. But they just got another Venezuelan gang leader who had his own single-handed crime wave. 30-year-old was finally picked up and jailed. It's hard when they cross the border and you know they're gangsters. They still get in and get to stay. I don't understand this system, but man, I think I haven't met one person who doesn't think it is a problem. Where when Donald Trump first ran in 2016, I think a lot of people were like, why is it a big deal? How bad is the border? Now we all agree it is terrible. I mean, everybody agrees. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Senator Ted Cruz and Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State and CIA Director, standing by. But first, let me lay out the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You got half this or more of the Sixth Fleet sitting in the out there. Mm-hmm. And the Iranians have to ask, well, what's that for? Right. That Iran understands. They don't understand blah, blah, but they understand big aircraft carriers.
Calm before the fury, Israel waits to see what type of attack Iran will attempt as they promise to respond to the killing of the Hamas leader in their capital. Could they have a preemptive attack, Israel? Could that be ready to go? Let's discuss it.
Number two.
I'm not mad that she's not doing 15 interviews a day, but it can't last. It's very important, and we can't, you know, make favorites. Anybody running for the top office needs to be as available as possible.
Yep, Van Jones is 100% right. Day 18 of VP Harris' refusal to do any or all interviews, even outline her views, plans, and programs should she win. While Trump has never been more accessible, he did our show yesterday, and he'll have a press conference today. J.D. Vance has taken random questions for the last 3 days, over a dozen interviews since he became the VP or the nominee. The American people need to know where all the candidates stand.
Number one.
We can do background checks. We can do CDC research. We can make sure we don't have reciprocal carry among states. And we can make sure that those weapons of war that I carried in war is the only place where those weapons are at.
Really? You carried in war? Blowback. Governor Waltz's cutting remarks about J.D. Vance's years in the Marines got huge blowback when embellishments on his own service surfaced. And the backlash coming from the people he served with, not from me, not from Trump. We'll break it down. Mr. Secretary, welcome back.
Brian, it's great to be with you this morning.
Yeah, and also you say a Fox News contributor, I should add. So there's a lot going on. First off, I have so much respect for people that serve. I don't care if it's 4 years, 2 years, especially a guy like you to get into West Point, be number one in the class, your service after, and what you learn in life to get there is beyond reproach. The guy served 23 years. I think it's great. But why would he know that there's controversy about him not going to Iraq with his unit, that he's not a command sergeant when he retired, yet it was in the prompter. He said it. He's embraced it before. Kamala Harris said it. The staff in his first appearance got it wrong. And now he decides to take on J.D. Vance's service, almost laying out the gauntlet. I dare you to attack me. And the attacks are coming. Do you have a problem with what you've known so far about Waltz?
You know, Brian, for those of us who served, it's something that we did because we wanted to serve. We're proud of that. And to every veteran, you know, I feel the same way, no matter where they served, whether they were an infantry officer or public affairs, that doesn't make a difference. You decided to put the uniform on and put your life at risk. And I feel the same way about Waltz's service. Why you would go embellish that? Well, there's no need to do that, right? That's just crazy to talk about it in a way that's inconsistent with what you actually did. You know, Brent, I never served in combat. Every now and again, somebody will say something, and I'll correct them immediately because I don't, right? You want to talk about what you did and why you did it, and to have him talk about the fact, you know, that his service didn't reflect what we all know he actually did, the choices he actually made, is inconsistent with that idea of actually having served in our armed forces.
Yeah, I just want you to hear. So I guess command sergeant, is that the highest rank you can have as a listed guy? And to do it, don't you have to go to almost a year of school, I'm learning, in order to do it? He never completed it. Therefore, he was demoted when he left, not as command sergeant, but he retired prior. The guy that had to take the unit because he didn't was on last night. And here's what he said. Cut 10. Thomas Behrens.
I would say from what I get from the soldiers that I went to Iraq with, you know, probably 98% of them are, you know, completely against him embellishing his record. You know, it was, you know, yeah, he was in for 24 years and he quit. Well, okay, so that's what you did.
Three of his guys died in battle and he didn't lead them there. And then he left and he went and tried to run for Congress. We all make decisions, but I think mischaracterizing it is wrong. Also, he used it to segue to gun control, getting rid of what he calls assault weapons, which I don't know how you feel about it, but I think that's pushing it. The weapons I took to war shouldn't be on the streets. That's a statement that needs scrutiny.
Absolutely, Brian. But that's a silly. By the way, it shows the unseriousness of both Vice President Harris and Governor Waltz. These aren't serious people who are thoughtful and really trying to achieve outcomes. They're just out there telling the American people a wolf story about these things, to talk about these weapons of war, the things you carried. I mean, that's nonsense. Right. I think the American people will come to see that as well. And what I heard from the gentleman last night who was speaking, I think, is precisely right. There's no need to embellish the fact that you decided to put on the uniform and serve. Tell the truth. And there is a very senior enlisted rank. I don't know the details. I don't know the exact facts. But there's no need. There's no reason that you should tell a story that is different from what you actually did while you were in service. That service alone is enough, Brian.
Mr. Secretary, do you still get high-level briefings?
I do from time to time, yes.
So, I mean, obviously, you don't want to boast state secrets, but, I mean, everybody's on pins and needles in the Middle East right now because of the taking out of three commanders, one Hezbollah, one in Gaza, Mohammed Deif, and then the Hayani over in Tehran. So they promise unrepentant attacks. Russia comes out of nowhere, Vladimir Putin yesterday, and says, I'm urging Iran not to target civilians and limit your response. What's behind that? Now all of a sudden they care about civilians? Have we seen them in Syria and Ukraine?
It's a unique step. It must suggest somehow that Vladimir Putin wants the focus to be on his theater of war. for whatever reason. I find it an odd statement. We'll see if he backs it up and seconds the motion and stays at it. For Vladimir Putin, we know, Brian, you and I have been talking about this for a long time, doesn't give a rip about civilian deaths, whether they're his own and his own soldiers or whether they're the civilians in Ukraine or Ukrainian soldiers. He doesn't give a rip about any of those things. And so for him to say, hey, we want to make sure that there aren't Israelis that are killed, very hard to explain. Maybe it's the case that, you know, his footprint, the Russian footprint in Syria today, there's a lot of Russian soldiers there. Maybe he's worried about an Israeli response against his troops in Syria, and he wants to say, hey, I wasn't in on this, and that is his public statement. And quietly, he's still urging the Iranians to cause trouble for the Americans and the Israelis.
So I understand, you know, they are really affecting the war in Ukraine with the drone technology that they've given, the actual drones themselves, and I think they set up a factory inside Russia. And in turn, Iran wants Su-35s, and Russia's reluctant to give it to them. What would they need them for? And how vulnerable is Iran right now to an Israeli attack?
So the Su-35 is a pretty capable fighter aircraft. It would come probably with all the support that's adjacent to that. So it would be a tremendous increase in the Iranian arsenal if they both had the aircraft, the support, and the pilots capable of flying them. So I think we're probably a long ways away from that. Having said that, make no mistake about it, the Iranians know that their strike on Israel directly out of Iran was totally ineffective and that the Israelis have demonstrated their ability to reach downtown Tehran. And so I think the Iranians are thinking hard about what the strike ought to look like, what their so-called vengeance effort ought to be, because they know that this will inflict enormous harm. And in the end, that harm is something they don't care about. If Iranian civilians are killed, the Ayatollah doesn't give a darn. But the risk to the regime, if they get this wrong, and if the United States will actually support Israel in its efforts, the risk to Iran is real. While they are powerful and capable, we've seen this before, Brian. These authoritarian regimes can prove very brittle in a time of crisis.
Right. We see it over and over again. So Sinwar is now in charge of the political as well as military wing. He's the one who designed the October 7th attack, and now he's hiding in the tunnels. He's hiding in the tunnels inside Gaza, but he's got both. He's not going to put on some gel and start going to negotiations. He'll get killed on the spot. But it looks like they are really forcing and smoking Hamas out over there. They're starting to make command. They took out another commander again. And now Sinwar has got a bigger target on him, but he's surrounded by the hostages, reportedly. What do people tell you about the progress they're making, the Israelis are making in Gaza? Because I know it's been frustrating because they look like Hamas looks like civilians, and they seem to move away with civilians from battlefields.
Brian, these are hard fights when military folks hide amongst civilians. We saw this time and time again. Make no mistake about it, though, the Israelis have methodically taken down the Hamas infrastructure and are methodically taking down its leadership. Your life is absolutely uninsurable if you're a senior Hamas leader today, because the Israelis will continue this methodical takedown. What has proven difficult is, A, they're still trying to get these hostages home, and that has proven frustrating to the Israeli people. And frankly, the fact that Americans are still held, I find unconscionable that the United States hasn't done more to get our people back home. But finally, the Israelis are determined to ensure that they don't put themselves in a position where the risk of October 7th once again arises. So, they'll finish this mission, and then the hard task, Brian, which we've talked about before as well. The hard task is, how do you make sure that you don't have this problem from the north, from Hezbollah? And I'm very confident that if the United States will simply give the Israelis all the space and capability they need, the Israelis can dethrone that threat as well, or take down that threat as well.
They want to make Israel unlivable, so it begins to evacuate. And they want to just be continuing to hit them from all sides, from Syria, from Lebanon, and from Gaza, let alone the threat of Iran. And that's what's at stake here. And I think that when you have Anthony Blinken saying things like this, I don't think it works to Israel's advantage. Listen, cut 40.
Further attacks only raise the risk of dangerous outcomes that no one can predict and no one can fully control. It's urgent that everyone in the region take stock of the situation, understand the risk of miscalculation, and make decisions that will calm tensions, not exacerbate them.
Problem solved. So, I mean, is that something diplomatic speak? Is that something you'd be saying?
Absolutely not. That just fuels Hamas, that just fuels Hezbollah, that just fuels Tehran. They see that as the United States being in a position where there's virtual moral equivalence between these two sides, asking everyone to be calm and cool while you've had 1,200 of your people killed and have missiles being launched out of Lebanon and Syria into your country every day. It is foolish to think somehow that you're going to convince the Iranians to stand down. They understand one thing, Brian. They understand power. They understand risk. And so long as the United States and Israel don't present any risk to Iran, we're going to be at this, whether that is in theater or assassination attempts here in the United States or in Europe. The Iranians are determined to go after the great Satan, the United States, and the little Satan, Israel, until such time as we flex our power, which we have. We don't have to send divisions to do this. We have lots of power and lots of leverage to convince the Iranians to stand down and to deter them.
So there was a 41-year-old Pakistani national who has a family in Tehran and has a family in Pakistan. And he was caught. They knew when he crossed the border he was going to be a problem. So it looks like the FBI infiltrated to him and was able to put some guys there to make it seem like they were going to be hired assassins. He offered them $5,000 to kill a high-valued American political figure. And they won't say if it's Trump. And it could be you. Don't you both have prices on your head?
Brian, well, I do. There has been a bounty of fatwa against myself and a couple other senior Americans, including President Trump, for quite some time now. I can't say much about this case in particular. I know a little bit about it, but can't add much other than it's indicative of Iran's continued efforts. This is what I was just speaking to. The Iranians are determined to avenge the death of Qasem Soleimani, the general that the Trump administration took out and who had killed hundreds and hundreds of American servicemen. This requires an administration, a president of the United States who is serious about defending the American people, not just me, not just for government officials, but all of us. And the Biden team, including Vice President Harris, has failed at that epically.
And I understand they took back Robert O'Brien's security, national security advisor. I think that these Biden people should understand that that's a precedent that maybe they don't want to continue when they're done.
Yes, I think everyone who serves, whether or in civilian government, who is threatened by a foreign nation, ought to be protected in a way that is reflective of the risk that's on them. And I know what Ambassador O'Brien's gone through. I hope they will provide him adequate protection, as I hope they will for General McKinsey, who is the commander of CENTCOM, and all of the folks who were part of the Trump administration's effort to keep America safe.
Lastly, Ukraine did something they haven't really done before. They went into Russian territory, about 1,000 people. Ukrainian forces, troops, for the third day in a row, smashed through the Russian border in Kursk. They call it an audacious attack into Russia. It was one of the biggest Ukrainian attacks on Russia in the two-year war. 1,000 Ukrainian troops rammed through the Russian border. What is the message they're sending?
The message is pretty clear, and it's one that is 2.5 years too late, and it's America's fault, largely. The message is very clear. The message is you are no longer safe inside your own border. Right? It's no longer the case that we're just going to play defense. We're going to pose real costs on Russian military targets inside of Russia. Those are the kind of things, Brian, that will convince Putin. It'll change Putin's calculus in ways that are so fundamental. When all you do is catch missiles and repair facilities – and say, gosh, we're surviving these onslaughts, these murders of civilians in our own country, you're not going to convince Putin to stand down. If you begin to impose real costs on his military assets inside of his own country, the risk of escalation actually decreases, not increases. Mm-hmm. And that's something the Biden administration failed to understand. They have this view that somehow if the Ukrainians attack inside of Russia, Vladimir Putin will be more aggressive. I just think that's completely backwards. And for 4 years, we deterred Vladimir Putin from attacking Ukraine and Europe. This administration walked in and they fumbled it. And here we are with thousands of dead Americans in Europe at risk. Thousands of dead Ukrainians and Europe at risk.
But the mighty Russian army's been unmasked. They're not. Paying a price.
That's absolutely true, Brian.
Ms. Secretary, thanks so much. Mike Pompeo, hope to see you soon.
Thank you. Have a good week.
You got it. Mike Pompeo. I could talk to him for 4 hours and still not go over everything. Listen, I'll come back and I will get in some calls. And then Senator Ted Cruz. Big day. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Whoever on Vice President Kamala Harris' team hit Kai Cenat to do a live stream, they need to be fired. Okay, stop letting social media run her campaign. You saw Trump go on Aiden Ross, and you saw the attention that garnered. You saw the headlines that got. You saw social media start saying the vice president needs to go on Kai Cenat, and you ran to go make that happen. Not even stopping to think, is this organic? Does Kai Cenat even care about politics?
So Charlamagne the God trying to give somebody he knows quite well, Kamala Harris, some advice about the media and what you should be doing. One thing, you got to be doing something. And we know one of the things that stood out, Charlamagne the God was in the middle of, when she said how much she loved smoking pot. She actually got her father, who was basically estranged and nothing to do with her life growing up. She goes, well, I'm Jamaican. Of course I smoke pot. And that reference insulted Kamala Harris's father, who came out of the woodwork just to talk about how she disgraced the family. And she also was someone who was depicting herself as tough on crime, put countless people into prison for marijuana use. The other one was when Joe Biden said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
All right, we are back, everybody. A lot going on. The President Trump, former President Trump's going to have a press conference at 2 o'clock today. And the press conference for Kamala Harris is, doesn't have any. We're in day 18, and she picks Tim Walz, and they don't do a sit-down, and none scheduled. Even President Biden's having an interview. He's going to sit down with CBS. We know exactly where Trump stands. From day one, by the way. He did a press conference the day he announced in 2016, and he hasn't really left the news cycle. It has thrown the team that they actually have, Kamala Harris, and it's not a free-for-all to find out who the nominee was. Now it was clear it was Harris. To her credit, she consolidated the Democratic support. The party is totally comfortable naming someone instead of putting someone through the primary process. And because she's untested, she remains uninterviewed. She wouldn't even take a random question. The one she took was about the prisoner swap, and she screwed it up. She was all over the place, didn't even know what she was talking about. But the same speech has been in the prompter, and she's delivered it. Tim Walz is his selection, and 70% of you know nothing about him. And that has really changed over the last 24 hours, and we'll explain that a little bit more. So Senator Ted Cruz knows all about the Trump phenomenon. He was the last one standing when 2016 to get when Trump got the nomination, and has been a supporter ever since. He is firmly in Ted Cruz's corner as he tries to get 6 more years as a senator from Texas at a very consequential time in American history. Senator Cruz, welcome back.
Brian, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And I know you waited for us to get KLIF in Dallas in order to join us. So we have another great station in Texas. So I appreciate it. You also have gone across party lines. I always heard about Democrats being different in Texas. And you've done just that. You have gotten the support of elected Democrat Kim Ogg because she loves that you're focused on many things that have make Texans' life better.
Well, that's exactly right. So Kim Ogg is the elected district attorney in Harris County. Harris County is Houston, the biggest city in Texas. She's an elected Democrat. She's been in office for 2 terms. And she this week endorsed me, and she endorsed me for one very simple reason, which is that unlike many of the Democrats, she's not lost her mind, and she actually wants to lock up bad guys, to put criminals in jail. And she looks at her party. She looks at my opponent, Colin Allred, who has had a record over and over again of voting against law enforcement, voting in favor of defunding the police, voting against deporting illegal immigrants who violently assault police officers. And Kim Ogg is supporting me because she wants, number one, to support law enforcement and to put criminals in jail, but number two, to finally secure our border, that the open borders that we're seeing from congressional Democrats, Texans are paying the price. Kim Ogg is the prosecutor who is bringing the prosecution against the 2 murderers who raped and murdered Jocelyn Nungari, the 12-year-old little girl who just over a month ago, 2 illegal immigrants from Venezuela who had been apprehended by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, who were released by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They came to Houston. and they took that beautiful 12-year-old girl. They abducted her. They violently assaulted her, and they murdered her. And this is happening every damn day. And, Brian, it's why we're seeing in Texas, in my race, a broad coalition coming together. We've had multiple Democrat office holders come over and endorse me because they want a strong senator who will fight for jobs, fight for law enforcement, and fight for border security.
So right now in Texas, it's really the work of your governor, and you guys have done a good job on enforcing your own border. Have things gone down since over the last 2 months?
Well, Texas continues to lead the way, and we put billions of dollars of resources in terms of building additional wall, in terms of having troopers on the ground. And what we've seen is a lot of the traffic of illegal immigration is shifting elsewhere. It's shifting to California. It's shifting to Arizona. It's shifting places other than Texas. But the problem is that that doesn't save us from the consequences. One thing to understand, you may think that wherever you live, that you don't live on the southern border. If that's what you think, you'd be wrong. Because as 11.5 million people have flooded into this country illegally, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have put them on buses and planes and flown them to every community in America. Wherever they want to go, Biden and Harris and the Democrats send them there. And so even though there are fewer people crossing into Texas, they're nonetheless illegal immigrants that end up coming into Texas. You look at these two Venezuelans. They came in El Paso all the way on the western tip of Texas and promptly made their way to Houston, where they murdered beautiful Jocelyn Nungari. It's why I've introduced legislation, the Justice for Jocelyn Act, which would mandate that illegal immigrants in the custody of the administration have to be detained, that they can't let them go. If the Justice for Jocelyn Act had been law, Jocelyn would still be alive.
You mentioned that you do know the governor. You knew he was a congressman. Here's a little of what Governor Tim Walz thought or thinks, we imagine, still has these views now that he's the vice presidential nominee.
Don't ever shy away from our progressive values. One person's socialism is another person's neighborliness.
The more police are there, the more tension it is. The more tension it is, the more chance you have to get things.
Protecting and supporting access to gender-affirming health care is essential.
He talks about this wall. I always say, let me know how high it is. If it's 25 feet, then I'll invest in the 30-foot ladder.
We saw large, peaceful protests focusing on the systemic changes.
So, and he went on to praise those changes. And his wife went on to say, I opened up the windows to hear the smelling burning tires as if it was something that was going to make the country better. So that is that the guy that you think America needs to know?
Look, I think his record is absolutely radical. And let me say two things about Tim Walz. Number one, the clear front runner to be Kamala's VP nominee was Josh Shapiro. Josh Shapiro is the governor of Pennsylvania. He's considered a moderate. Pennsylvania is the single most important swing state. It's right now neck and neck. It's within a couple of points. Shapiro's numbers in Pennsylvania are very strong, which means there's a good argument that picking Shapiro might have taken Pennsylvania off the map. And yet, and Kamala Harris and the Democrats, they thought very, very seriously about picking Shapiro, and they didn't. And the reason they didn't, Brian, I'm very sorry to say, the reason they didn't was one thing. Josh Shapiro is Jewish. And they decided that the crazies in the Democrat Party, that the pro-Hamas Democrats who hate Israel, who are anti-Semites, would lose their mind if Kamala named a Jewish vice president. I got to say, that is really sad for one of the two major parties essentially to put up a sign, no Jews need apply. But if Josh Shapiro's name had been Josh Smith, he would have been the VP, but he wasn't. They were too scared of Dearborn, Michigan, and Minnesota to actually name a Jewish Democrat. What did they do instead? They went to Tim Walz. Tim Walz is arguably the most radical left-wing governor in the state of in the country. Kamala, an objective third-party rating service, found her the most left-wing senator in the entire Senate. So you have the most left-wing governor and the most left-wing senator teamed up. This is the most radical ticket we've ever seen. As you know, Brian, I do a podcast every week called Verdict with Ted Cruz. We do it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. yesterday's podcast is entirely on this topic, where we break down in detail Tim Walz's record. If you don't know the specifics of it, you should go and download the podcast Verdict with Ted Cruz, because it'll give you all of the details. This is a man who is so radical that he honeymooned in communist China. Remember Bernie Sanders honeymooned in the Soviet Union? Well, Tim Walz honeymooned in communist China. And do you know what day Tim Walz got married on?
What, he got the Tiananmen Square massacre.
That's exactly right. He set his wedding the day of the Tiananmen Square massacre and then went to communist China to honeymoon. Now to use a word Tim Walz is fond of using, that's weird. If you're celebrating the Chinese communists murdering and oppressing their citizens, that's not really in the realm of normalcy. That is a hardcore Marxist ideologue, which is why he says, you played it just a minute ago, one man's socialism is another man's neighborliness. You know, I couldn't help tweeting out, one man's theft is another man's Christmas. I mean, that's what he's saying. Well, you know, just you know, sure, you might not like it because I'm taking from you, but I like it because I get the stuff I take.
Just on the anti-Semitism here in New York, the CEO of the Jewish Community Relations Council of New York said, quote, no one should dismiss that Governor Shapiro was subjected to an ugly anti-Semitic campaign to delegitimize him. They think there was a campaign behind the scenes that even we didn't see. So we'll have to see on that. Senator, it's pretty amazing that they think a good attack plan is to call President Trump and J.D. Vance weird. Listen to this. Cut 20.
And I'm not a name caller, but what I am as a teacher, I observe things. So I want to tell you what I observed, and you've observed about these guys when you see them, that it's a very clear thing. Yes, they are creepy and weird as hell. You see it. You see it. This is not normal. This is not normal behavior. Nobody's asking for this crazy stuff.
So I don't know what he's talking about. I mean, you're telling 70 million people that voted for him that you like a creepy, weird guy. I mean, didn't Hillary Clinton teach them anything?
Well, sadly, I do know what's going on there. And it's the Democrats today, they embody Freudian projection, the idea that whatever it is about themselves that they're afraid of, they project and they accuse it of others. Democrats love to beat their chest and say, we must save democracy. They do this while trying to fight to get Donald Trump thrown off the ballot so the voters can't vote for him. They do this while throwing Joe Biden off the ballot and putting Kamala Harris on there, even though no Democrat primary voter, not a single one, voted for her to be president. Everything they accuse the other side of doing is what they're doing. When it comes to being weird, look, Donald Trump is an incredibly successful businessman. J.D. Vance is a Marine and a businessman, and that scares the hell out of him. So you want to know what's weird? What's weird is Tim Walz, as governor, signing legislation mandating that tampons be put in every boy's bathroom in school. Now, last I checked, boys don't need tampons. I may not – it's been a while since I did biology – But I feel pretty comfortable about this. Last I checked, look, Tim Walz signed legislation carving pedophilia out of the definition of sexual orientation, saying, no, pedophilia is okay. He signed that legislation. That is strange stuff. Tim Walz has gone around saying, you don't have any free speech right to engage in misinformation or to spread what he calls hate. Well, no, actually you do. You have something called the First Amendment. And it means that nanny state government officials like Tim Walz and Kamala Harris don't get to silence you and decide if what you're saying is misinformation or not. If you say Anthony Fauci is full of crap, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz don't get to come along and say, no, I'm sorry, we're going to lock you up, we're going to silence you, we're going to censor you, we're going to punish you because we have deemed that misinformation. That's not the First Amendment. These guys are radicals, and it's who today's Democrat Party is.
So, Senator, what is the approach? You've seen so much in politics, and you also work as far back as George W. Bush's campaign. If your opponents want to run from their record and run differently than they governed and in Kamala Harris's case has been vice president, DA, AG, senator. What if she comes back and says, yeah, I'm for fracking. I'm for offshore drilling. Yeah. I'm for enforcing the border. I want to cut spending. What if your opponent goes ahead and almost tries to take your issues and sell that? How do you approach it?
Well, that's exactly what they're doing. And the answer is truth and substance and how the policies impact the American people. And I got to say, it is striking. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz at the presidential level are doing the exact same thing that my opponent, Colin Allred, who's the Democrat running against me for Senate, is doing at the Senate level. Both Kamala and Colin Allred are hiding from the press. Both of them have hunkered down in the basement. In fact, I think they checked in together into the witness protection program. They don't do media interviews. They don't do press conferences. They don't answer questions. They simply hide. Their strategy is twofold. Number one, they are counting on the utterly corrupt corporate media to just lie for them. We're in the middle of a multi-billion dollar PR campaign trying to claim that Kamala Harris is a mix of Mother Teresa and Oprah and Gandhi.
It's crazy.
And they're telling Kamala, just shut up and read your teleprompter. Don't say anything. We got this. Colin Allred, they're doing the same thing. He won't answer questions. He won't answer questions about Jocelyn Ungaray. He won't answer questions about Cori Bush. Neither Kamala nor Colin Allred would say a thing about Cori Bush, the radical anti-Semite squad member defeated just this week. They both were utterly silent because you know what? They wanted her to win because that's their base, and they're counting on the media, and then they're counting on just hundreds of millions of dollars of paid ads to deceive people. And so what it means is it means your listeners, number one, you need to go and support Donald Trump and contribute to him because he needs the resources to communicate. But you also, I need the resources too. I want to encourage everyone to come to tedcruz.org, tedcruz.org. You know, I'm facing – Chuck Schumer has named me the number one target in the country, and the Democrats are spending between $100 million and $150 million trying to beat me. They are – George Soros and Schumer are flooding Texas with cash, and we've had three polls this last month that show this as a three-point race because that much money does real impact. And so I got to say to your listeners, I need your help.
Gotcha.
Please come to tedcruz.org, give $25, $50, $100. If you want a strong conservative warrior fighting for your freedom, gotcha, for your constitution, then I need your help at tedcruz.org.
Go get him, Senator Ted Cruz. Thanks so much. Have a great day. When we come back, your turn. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
I have a real good feeling in my heart that this spacecraft will bring us home, no problem.
That mantra you've heard, failure is not an option. That's why we are staying here now.
There you go. That is dealing with the Boeing Starliner that is having problems with its thrusters. While it's up at the space station, they were supposed to be home in, 6 days? Now they might be up there until February. They're trying to recreate a thruster problem on the ground. And when they do it, they feel they can maybe implement some type of fix in the space. But how embarrassing for Boeing. This is incredible. I mean,
it's very embarrassing for Boeing. And they need to, if they do actually send it back, though, without the crew, they're going to need to update the software.
Yeah.
Something we didn't think about prior.
I know. And the other thing is, you just appreciate Elon Musk even more. I mean, yeah, it's a public-private partnership, but all the engineers, they're with SpaceX. And SpaceX is like, hey, we could get them in there, but we do have our own schedule. And they are building, they're building even a bigger rocket. We're now in Florida, and it's getting the whole space coast a little upset. Evidently, he makes a lot of noise. No, his goal is to get to Mars. You know, and do the other thing, just short commutes to the moon.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. We've got a busy hour coming your way. Come to you from Midtown Manhattan. But, you know, we're a national show. Mark Thiessen's coming up at the bottom of the hour. He's an insightful political genius, I think. Washington Post columnist, a speechwriter, and a Fox News contributor, best-selling author. He's got a great podcast, What the Hell is Going On? Which, by the way, Allison, I think he invited me on this summer. So I think it's up to me to come up with a date. Is that something?
Maybe is I should that how with invitations
him.
Work?
I know. He's like, when are we going to do the podcast? I don't know. When are we going to do it? I mean, shouldn't he, if he's asking me out, he should have the date in mind.
I would agree. He should plan it. Like, are you right. going to dinner, you know,
right.
lunch?
I mean, is it a big thing? Do I have to be there?
How should you dress?
Right. Yeah, that's a big one. Eli Beer is going to be with us in 15 minutes. He's a founder and president of Friends of United Hatzla, Inc., which is Israel's largest all-volunteer emergency medical response organization. He's got this huge team in Israel to tell you exactly what's going on the ground, because we could have a regional war at any moment. But I have to say, with each day that goes by, I get the sense with the brand new Iranian president, they're wondering if they're even prepared for the retort and the retaliation, should they retaliate for the killing of Haniyeh in Tehran. So I think each day that goes by a little bit different. I just don't want us to sell our collective American soul in order to do it. What are they promising the Iranians to get them not to attack? Russia weighed in. I don't know what they're up to. I asked Mike Pompeo this earlier. What are they up to? And he says possibly they want more attention on the Ukraine war. They don't want to lose resources there. But if a regional war breaks out, maybe Iran no longer can supply them with the killer drones, the suicide drones they've been supplying to the Russians. It really pushed the war back in their favor. But I don't know if you heard, but the Ukrainians went over the Russian border, 1,000 of them, create some havoc over there. That's the first time. So the message to Russia is you're not safe either. You might be bombing us daily, but we got F-16s and we're going to come across our border too. The big story, of course, is what's happening with the campaign. Today, in 3 hours, President Trump will have a press conference. Today, already, the vice president nominee, J.D. Vance, is taking questions. Yesterday and the day before, the same thing. They will not take any questions. It's ridiculous. They don't sit in the interviews, even a friendly interview. Why did you change your opinion when it comes to oil and gas? Why did you change your opinion when it comes to sanctuary cities, which you affirm, and now sanctuary states in California? Why do we believe that you're going to crack down on the border? What do you mean you say your focus is going to be on bringing inflation down? If it is your focus, you're the vice president. Why isn't it down now? But we never get to hear that because we don't hear them do interviews. We just hear their speeches. And Democrats are so relieved not to have Joe Biden. They are surging her equal to Donald Trump's team. And I think it's frustrating to the Trump group, but they feel as though over the weekend, according to my source, they recalibrated. They got their game plan. They're meeting with all sources. They're getting their new spots ready to go. Cost them millions of dollars to redo them since they're no longer facing Joe Biden, but they're ready to go. Kamala Harris is realizing what Joe Biden realizes. He's losing Michigan, was losing Michigan, because he was semi in Israel's corner. And everywhere he went, he was getting protesters because he's pro-Israel and not pro-Palestinian Hamas. Listen to this yesterday, cut 15.
I'm here because we believe in democracy. Everyone's voice matters, but I am speaking now.
So people were saying, you're calling it genocide, you're supporting genocide, they want him to divest. Here's more from that speech, cut 16.
And he intends to end the Affordable Care Act. You know what? If you want Donald Trump to win, then say that, otherwise I'm speaking.
So that was an applause line, but she's going to get used to that. Because when you go into these areas, these cities, a lot of people are upset that these Democrats are giving the first any weapons at all to Israel. That's how much this country has changed, or that party has changed. It's just absolutely horrendous. Just shows you around the world that hardens terrorists. They think they're winning. And I think this is a concerted campaign to spread that type of radical Islamic sympathy through this country, which would have been impossible to fathom under Trump, under Bush. Even under Obama, I mean, he never wanted to use his middle name because it's too Arab. It made people feel as though, wow, he might be friendly with terrorists, which he's not. Never thought that. But when you say Barack Hussein Obama, they go, oh, my goodness, that brings up Saddam Hussein. That's what people think of. Now it seems like that's a badge of honor. Wow, I'm wearing Hamas garb, Palestinian garb. I have the Yasser Arafat training kit, and people are proud of that, and they're covering their faces. But I think a lot of the states are wising up to it. But what they're talking about is getting the inflation down, not saying that Bidenomics is great. The economy could be better. They're admitting it. But what she doesn't understand is they're causing it. They caused it. And that's the debate that's going to happen. That's why Trump indicated yesterday that he's going to do it. Here is what Trump said about the running mate of Tim Walz. And I thought it was really telling. He came out and he basically said that Walz is a gift. Cut 22. He also talked about the first time they interacted together. And it was right after the George Floyd riots. And with the riots raging, he doesn't know this guy. He knows he's a Democrat, liberal Democrat in Minnesota. He knows Minneapolis is burning down. And he also knows that his own mansion's being surrounded. Cut 22.
I was in the White House. He said, if you would put out the word that I'm a good person. And I did. I put out the word. I said, he's a good person. I hope everything's good. And everybody put down their flags and took their flags with them. But they took their American flags and their MAGA flags and they left. It was thousands of people. And that was the first time I said, wow, that's very interesting. And he called me back and he thanked me very much. That's my only thing I ever had to do with him. He's a very, very liberal man. And he's a shocking pick, and I'm thrilled. I could not be more thrilled.
I think if you examine what he did during the pandemic, you're not going to vote for him. I think if you look at his social spending, his view on transitioning, being a sanctuary for transitioning, being a sanctuary for abortions, five babies born after being brought to full term alive, only two were given comfort. They died. When you see this stuff, it's going to be hard for me to believe you're going to support this guy. Unless he's going to say, yeah, I was really liberal as a governor. Sorry, I'm just going to support Kamala Harris, who's suddenly, I don't know, moderate, which no one believes, but that's how she's acting. Brooke Rollins, CEO of America First Policy Institute, brought up the fact that through surrogates and through speeches, it looks like Kamala Harris is trying to remake herself. Cut 31.
For me as a mom, that's a couple of new amazing appliances, perhaps an additional car, perhaps sending one of my kids to a better school. I mean, that's real money that makes a real difference. So the fact that she's actually saying she's going to run and make America affordable again, I mean, Kamala, you've had 3.5 years to do that. And in fact, not only have you not made it affordable, you've made it amazingly much more expensive to live in this country.
And what I would do is you have a week and then you have the DNC. You have a week. So why give up that week? Now, I was talking to the Trump camp, and they said they've had two fundraisers, two appearances, a press conference today, and J.D. Vance was doing a great job out on location, and I don't doubt that. But I would go rally after rally after rally, even in the DNC, and just show people there's a counter-narrative out there. Make people cover it. Even if they don't, you go into these cities, and you get some people that are not attending. Do you know that Sherrod Brown, John Tester, are not going? Because if you're a moderate, you don't want to be seen with the Democratic Party. You don't want to be seen with this ticket. So I'm very curious to see, well, what's going to happen in Wisconsin and if you're really going to go, if you're running for the Senate seat, a congressional seat, a governor's seat, go to this Democratic convention. I know you want to support your new ticket and want to pretend that you respect Joe Biden and he wasn't forced out. He was George Washington and stepped out, but we know different. The other simmering controversy, there's two of them. Number one is, in Minnesota, it's just emblematic of talking out of both sides of your mouth when it comes to green technology and the changing of our economy, the transformation of our economy, the Paris ordeal. And they say, we're going to make this totally green. We're going to redo all the houses, the windows, build windmills, and get rid of electric grids that are coal-fired. But if you actually want people, like Minnesota does, to have 50% of all people have electric cars and stop selling gas cars in your state, like California is going to stop sending, and I imagine New York is too, then you got to get batteries, you got to be able to get rare earth, and you got to be able to build all the things necessary to have an electric car, expand the grid. So you need rare earth. Guess who has rare earth? Minnesota. Guess who has a 20-year moratorium when it comes to mining? Minnesota. Biden backed it. Walt is thrilled with it. So now I want China to benefit by building their batteries. We'll buy them. We'll get electric cars. And we'll have a clean America. But nobody else will be clean. They won't be clean in Venezuela. They won't be clean. They won't be clean over in China. Dirty air, dirty water. But we'll do that. And the other big thing is his links to China. Been there 30 times. He honeymooned there. Bizarre. I wouldn't say weird, but it's bizarre. When we come back, we'll have to talk to Eli Beer about another controversy, and that is the support of Israel right now could be getting hit from seven sides. Are they ready? We'll discuss it.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Further attacks only raise the risk of dangerous outcomes that no one can predict and no one can fully control. It's urgent that everyone in the region take stock of the situation, understand the risk of miscalculation, and make decisions that will calm tensions, not exacerbate them.
There you go. The Secretary of State asking for everyone to calm tensions in the region. I think that's the goal, but we also are no closer to any peace in the area because Israel hasn't been allowed, in my view, to finish the job. Eli Beer joins us now, founder and president of Friends of United Hatzla, Inc., Israel's largest all-volunteer emergency medical response and organization. Eli, welcome back. Your thought, can you tell our audience what things are like on the ground right now and what city you're in?
Right now, I'm in Jerusalem, in Israel, seeing the situation all around me, and I'm worried like you.
What are they telling you?
Well, the missiles are hitting everywhere around the south, the north of Israel. Thank God. We have very little missiles in the south of Israel because the IDF are doing an incredible job in Gaza, in Rafah, in the places that everyone said don't go in, we are in. And we have almost full control of Gaza, not completely under the ground, but above the ground. And the biggest problem we have right now is the north of Israel, where Hezbollah, Iran, of course, which is the head of the whole snake, and they're the ones who are pushing the Iraqis, the militia there, and Houthis and others to attack Israel.
So the north is where Hezbollah is looking to get back. Tehran, they said they're going to get back for killing Hania in their city. And the Houthis have never really stopped. So you're bracing for anything. Are you surprised it's been about a week now and there's been no retort? Do you think they're having second thoughts?
Well, so, Brian, first of all, I must say that the Houthis stopped for now because Israel came with 15 F-16s and F-35s, and bombed the hell out of them. And
last
they
week,
stopped
right?
since
yeah.
that day. That was, I think, almost 10 days ago. And since that moment, we had nothing from the Houthis, almost nothing. And that's what we have to do in Lebanon. And that's what we have to do eventually to Iran, because these people, all they think about and all they're working about day and night is to destroy Israel. And their plan is not only Israel, is to continue on to the rest of the world. So we have to wake up and take care of the problem.
And do you think how has the slow walking of weapons affected the battlefield, the slow walking of American weapons?
Well, right now, thank God, after Netanyahu's visit in the United States, what I hear is the situation is better. I actually saw a lot of airplanes landing the last few days in Israel from the U.S. with the weapons, and we need to continue. We have a big mission in front of us. It's not such a simple situation. We're like back to 1942, where, you know, powers of evil are trying to destroy the people who want to live peacefully. And we're the victims now, the same way they had the ISIS, 10 years ago. And now we have Hamas doing the same exact thing. Hezbollah are joining the Hamas, and Iran is manipulating the whole thing.
And what does it do, the fact that we're allowing them to sell their oil to China?
Well, that's the biggest problem, because if they didn't have money, they wouldn't do all this. I mean, Iranians, most of the Iranian people are good people, the people living there, but their government, they're evil, evil people. They have a radical belief that no one has to live. Anyone who's not like them has to die. That's their belief. That's why they hate Israel. We had a very good relationship before Khomeini took over. And Israel and Iran were very good friends. And then they took over, and one day everything changed. And they literally had a revolution in Iran, and then they said, death to Israel, death to America. That was their – since that day that Khomeini took over, every Friday, tens of thousands of people are yelling, death to Israel, death to America. And they finally have the money to do it. They're selling oil everywhere. And no one's stopping them, and it has to be stopped, because if they didn't have money, they wouldn't do this.
I hear you. James Carafano is an intelligence officer, Army Lieutenant Colonel, an expert in this area. He was on our channel yesterday, and he talked about the possible scenarios and the repercussions. Cut 43.
Iran, okay, fine. You can unload on Israel. Israel can unload on you, but there's countries in between. You really can't fight a conclusive war. So what does that mean? Well, what's going to happen on day one of the war? The Israelis are going to go after every single command and control target in Iran. They're going to destroy the capacity to control the country. They're going to take out your infrastructure. They're going to take out your electricity. They're going to take out your oil thing. Then they're going to go after your nuclear sites.
Right.
And all for an inconclusive war. And if there's anything we know from the Israelis, they know how to be resilient and survive and fight back.
So they have to wonder if it's worth the risk. I mean, what did you guys show in the response to the 300 missiles that came over that were mostly blocked with no casualties? Then you hit back at Iran. But what did you show? You could penetrate their airspace and get to their nuclear sites. They know that could be next.
Well, first of all, Israel is incredibly, with our belief and our, we're never going to let what happened in during the Holocaust, the Jews were sent to concentration camps and to be burned in the gas chambers. We are fighting back. And thank God we have so many Americans with us. And I would say America's with us. And we need America stronger with us. Because right now we're fighting the devil that's actually targeting America eventually. We're on the way. And what we're doing now in Iran, what Israel did just a couple of days ago with Hania, was the right thing to do. We need to go after all these bad people, or Hitlers, the little Hitlers. They're everywhere. You have to get rid of these people. These people are taking advantage of their power, their money, hurting their own people. What they're doing to Iran, most of the Iranians want to live peacefully. They took over. Well, I would say the Iranians are hostage in their hands. The same thing with Lebanon. Lebanon is a beautiful country. Hezbollah, who are proxies of Iran, are destroying that country. They turned it into a terror country. Right now, Lebanon are responsible for all the terror going on in the north of Israel. And it's only because a group of people took over Lebanon. They control the whole country. We need to target the people who are control. We need to target Hania. Not Hania. I need to target already, but we need to target the head of Hezbollah and Iranians, the ones who are controlling Iran.
And then that would really send a message. But Nasrallah is in charge. That would be titanic. Thank you, Ellie Bear.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You know what really bothers me about Tim Walz? As a Marine who served his country in uniform, when the United States Marine Corps, when the United States of America asked me to go to Iraq to serve my country, I did it. I did what they asked me to do, it, and I did it honorably, and I'm very proud of that service. When Tim Walz was asked by his country to go to Iraq, you know what he did? He dropped out of the Army and allowed his unit to go without him, a fact that he's been criticized for aggressively by a lot of the people that he served with. I think it's shameful to prepare your unit to go to Iraq, to make a promise that you're going to follow through, and then to drop out right before you actually have to go.
Yeah, and that was J.D. Vance yesterday. Part of the reason was he was called out on the stage to introduce Tim Walz. He gets called out, something about mocking his service, and then he went to an Ivy League school after, which was, can I just say, a little weird? Why would you choose that on J.D. Vance to go after him at? So he's more than happy to start examining Tim Walz's background, which seems to be, at the very least, kindly to say, embellished, including his rank that was in the prompter and read. You could also call him Commanding Major General. Mark Thiessen is with us now, former chief speechwriter for George W. Bush, Fox News contributor, Washington Post columnist, fellow at the AEI, and a podcast host. What the hell is going on? It's the name of that. Mark, your thoughts about this being a target risk environment, his service, which should be commended at 23 years, but it shouldn't be embellished, correct?
So imagine if all the facts that we know about Waltz were true of J.D. Vance, that he had avoided service as soon as the war started and his unit was called up, he dropped out, claimed that he had been, carried a weapon in combat when he really hadn't, claimed a rank that he hadn't earned, and all the rest of it. Do you think the media would be ignoring it?
No.
Of course not. It's like they're completely in the tank for Harris and Waltz. Look, we've got a situation where we have two completely unknown, untested Democratic nominees. Kamala Harris has never gotten a primary vote in her life. If there had been a Democratic primary, she would have been raked over the coals by all the other contestants, and they would have exposed all the flaws in her record and her weaknesses as a candidate. Instead, she spent 20 days now almost on a teleprompter without taking a single question from reporters, without doing any press conferences. She's trying to pretend to be a moderate when she's the most radical nominee the party's ever had. Then you've got Waltz that nobody knows. And has a radical record. Early voting starts in 30 days.
It's crazy.
I mean, we've never had a situation now. It's not 3 months. Early voting is starting in a month. We've never had a situation where we have two unknown candidates with all these things in their record that would have come out if there had been a competitive process. And Americans are being asked to vote on them. So the clock is running on the ability of the Republican Party, the Trump fans ticket, to call them out for these things and draw these things out, because they're trying to get under the wire without getting noticed.
Here's this
how radical they are and how they've lied about their record.
So here's a member of Tim Walz's battalion. When it came out, he was supposed to lead it. New commanding general had to lead them in into Iraq. Cut 11.
But it wasn't so bad for the troops at that time because they didn't really know what was going on. Where it really hit him is when they came back, and then it all exploded as what he got out to do, to go into politics and stuff like that. And then when Tom Barron's, Command Sergeant Barron's story came out and they found out what he did, then people were mad because we all did what we were supposed to do. We did the right thing, and it's dishonorable what he did. He left somebody else up to take over his spot. He just ditched us.
Right, because they were a tight unit, evidently. So it's just odd that their decision to go after J.D. Vance on Marines and what he did after, they almost begged him to do this, to go after that. Number one, it made me question the screening. What kind of vetting did they do with this guy? Why would they put that in the prompter, Commanding Sergeant General, when they know that was at the very least controversial and not accurate? It brought all this scrutiny.
Well, apparently the same vetting that the Border Czar has been doing of all the people coming into the country.
Yeah.
I mean, the same process, the same incompetence that you've seen manifest under her leadership for 3 years is coming. And look, this is she had several options that were centrist, moderate, vetted. She had the option to pick Shapiro, who is somebody who has 61% approval in the state of Pennsylvania, in a must-win state. And she just thought, I don't know if she thought he was going to outshine her because he's more charismatic and smarter than she is, or whether she, or what the reason was, or maybe he was just too centrist, or maybe she didn't want a Jew because she's upset, worried about voters in Dearborn. But she decided to go with a radically left-wing governor from a state that the Democrats have won consistently since for 40 years. Now we got to figure out who this guy is, because it could be one heartbeat away from the presidency.
So we'll see. President Trump's going to have a presser today at 2 o'clock Eastern time. But if you want to know what Kamala Harris wants to do, she feels your pain. Listen, cut 17.
Because while our economy is doing well by many measures, prices for everyday things like groceries are still too high. You know it and I know it. You know, when I was attorney general, I went after price-fixing schemes. And when I am president, it will be a day one priority to fight to bring down prices.
Yes. Can we please get on those schemes? There's a lot of schemes trying to keep rich people, billionaires, probably white, are trying to get all the prices high. So everybody suffers and they make a lot of money. So did she ever think to herself, well, I am the vice president. I have a plan. Should I keep it from Joe Biden?
Well, I mean, first of all, not only is it the problem with inflation, not price fixing schemes. The problem with inflation is it was caused by the American Rescue Plan, the ironically named American Rescue Plan, that she cast the deciding vote on. She was the deciding vote that unleashed this inflation, and not just. And this is not a conservative talking point. Larry Summers, Democratic former Treasury Secretary, warned them, don't pass this thing or it'll unleash on record inflation. Obama's economic advisor said, this is pouring gasoline on an inflationary fire. Don't do it. This spending bill that she cast the deciding vote on for the Obama administration unleashed all this inflation. So when she sits there and says, I know prices are too high and we're going to go after the price fixers, people aren't stupid. This is what the people understand what's going on in this country. The people understand why the prices are going. They know that there's no conspiracy to raise prices in the private sector. It's because they unleashed this inflation with this massive spending and distorted the economy.
So, you know, and this is all going to come out with any interviews when you say prices are too high and inflation. Anybody would say, well, what responsibility do you have in having that happen? Are they going to go back and try to say, well, Donald Trump left us a pandemic? I don't know. What are they going to say? I let for 3.5 years. If they do that, I think they left their solar plexus wide open. But sooner or later, they have to sit. I think it's a very good strategy that the Trump team have. Keep doing pressers and keep demanding that they do the same thing. And then when J.D. Vance walked over and told the press watching covering Kamala Harris, don't you want to demand an interview? Shouldn't you be getting interviews? Do you have any questions for them? You know, almost to say, do your job. I love that.
No, that was a great moment. It was very smart for him to do it with the photo op of Air Force Two behind him, looking very vice presidential. And, you know, they sat there like lums on a log when he said, like, you know, have you asked her why she doesn't talk to you? They just sort of sat there, you know. I mean, I'm sure they hate it, too. They want to ask questions. They want to do their jobs. The problem with Harris is not just that she unleashed the inflation, the responsibility is what's your plan to bring it down? I mean, if you watch the interview Trump did with our network the other day with you guys on Fox and Friends, he said, I'm going to unleash American energy. We have liquid gold under our feet. You want to bring down the price of gas? Let's start pumping again. You know, he's got concrete solutions and reasons and things to help people out. He said, you know, people who can't, you know, working people who can't afford the cost of groceries anymore, they'd have a hell of a lot more money in their pockets if their tips weren't being taxed. And if you're a senior on a fixed income, if you're not paying taxes on your Social Security income, you'll have a lot more money to deal with inflation. So, I mean, he's got concrete solutions. They've got nothing but blaming big corporations for so-called price fixing.
All right. So if you are President Trump, you know that there's been a hail of positive press towards your opponent, and it's a brand new opponent. What do you tell him?
Focus on the policies. All this stuff about questioning whether she's Indian or black is just dumb. Focus on not on her race or ethnicity. Question her in her ideology. Question her record. Question her ideas. She is the most radical nominee that any party has ever put forward in the history of this country that I can going back at least in the modern era in my lifetime. Yeah, that call her out on those things. And the other thing he needs to recognize is this whole the reason she picked Waltz is because she's got a dual problem. She has a problem with her left-wing base, which is unhappy with the Biden-Harris administration, and she's also got a problem with swing voters. And she decided to – and it's a move of weakness because she had to solidify her base. Trump's base is on fire. You don't need to pour any gasoline on that. After the assassination attempt, they're going to walk over broken glass and molten lava and whatever the hell to get to that voting booth to vote for him. He doesn't need to energize them. He needs to focus on swing voters. There are a bunch of voters out there in these swing states who don't like Harris, don't like Biden, don't like what's going on in the country, think we're heading in the wrong direction, but they're not sure about Trump. They're not sure about whether to put him, they can feel comfortable putting back in the Oval Office. The next 3 months, his entire focus has to be on easing their concerns about him and raising their concerns about her. It's just that simple. And anything that doesn't serve that purpose is a waste of breath, a waste of energy. And, you know, all this stuff that, you know, go, well, you know, the base loves it. Who cares? They're voting for you. You don't need to fuel them. Focus on the swing voters nonstop for 3 months.
That's it. And then you know how to do the job. J.D. Vance, I think, has had a great week. Here's an example. Cut 27.
Thanks to Kamala Harris, grocery prices are up 30% since she took office. Gas prices are up 50% since she took office. Rent is over 40% since she took office. And instead of saying, I'm sorry, instead of saying, maybe, you know, we should go in a different direction, she's running from the media, refusing to answer tough questions, and hoping that a basement campaign is going to earn her a promotion.
So gee, he is staying on the issues, and you cannot trip him up with a question.
Yeah. Nope. He's saying the exact right thing. Smoke her out of the basement and focus on her record. Focus on contrast Donald Trump. Look, there's the new Harvard Harris poll came out. 54% of Americans think that Donald Trump's presidency was a success, including every age group and almost every demographic group. All think Trump's presidency was a success. The same people all think that the Biden-Harris presidency has been a failure. So focus on your record and contrast it with what they've done to the country, and you win. It's really not that hard.
So I'm just seeing this story about Tulsi Gabbard. You talk about a weaponization of government. She tells Matt Taibbi that she's confirmed that she's been put on a terror watch list, and she doesn't know why. Air marshals following her, dogs following her, wherever she travels, being watched constantly. Have you heard of anything like this?
I didn't even know about this. I haven't heard about that at all.
It's just amazing how this seems just to only be happening one way. The other thing to keep in mind, do you think that Tim Walz is a target-rich environment, or do you focus on Harris? Because he's got 30 visits to China. He honeymooned there, bizarrely. He speaks Chinese. He says it's good to have this type of knowledge. He has not really expressed any disdain for China, what they've been able to do. He's allowed one of their own, those famed Chinese police stations to prop up and stay up in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think you focus on both of them. I think we have to define him and we have to define her, and we have to do it fast. Because, again, voting starts in the people are going to start casting ballots in 30 days. We've never had a situation where we have, you know, these unknown candidates so close to the presidency. I mean, this will be the first, if they win, it'll be the first unvetted ticket in the history of our country that's gone through no process to do that. And better have debates. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say, because the only way you can guarantee that she and truthfully, he should have the same strategy that you had with Biden. Any place, anywhere, doesn't matter. Any rules, I'm fine with it, because she can't put this kid together a coherent sentence without a teleprompter, and she doesn't have the excuse of age. And the only way you're going to get her off to the teleprompter is by forcing her onto a debate stage for an hour and a half.
Although an interesting story came out. She likes to say that Donald Trump's a criminal, 34 convictions on felonies. And then this story came out I thought was really interesting. And that is from this, there was a push from this. The justice reform groups are urging Kamala Harris not to call Trump criminal. More than 160 criminal justice advocacy groups sent Harris an open letter urging her not to do this because there are 70 million Americans with criminal records, including 1 in 3 black men who have felony convictions, who are trying to shake it. And they see by labeling him, you're labeling them. Your thoughts?
That's a brilliant, message, and it really complicates things for her. If I was Trump, I would say to her, well, if I'm a criminal, you would have bailed me out.
Absolutely. I wish I was friendly with you. Thanks, Mark. Mark Thiessen, Washington Post, Fox News contributor. Thanks so much, Mark.
Take care.
Go get him. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
So yesterday we were telling you about a movie that Ryan Reynolds' wife is in, Blake Lively. It's called It Ends With Us. In it, she has a love interest, and it's not Ryan Reynolds, who plays Deadpool, correct?
Correct.
Came up with Deadpool. So he said that, I haven't heard this yet, but you said that Ryan Reynolds shows a real knack for publicity by acting this way at the junket.
Yeah, he crashed it and starts to interview Blake Lively's love interest, Brandon Sklenar, so we can listen.
Okay. It's not every day the husband gets to interview his wife's love interest in a film. It's kind of crazy.
I don't remember seeing this on the schedule.
Let's dive in, shall we? So I saw you posing in a photo with Mrs. Reynolds, and I'm sorry, what do you call her? Do you guys have a nickname or
no.
something? Okay, no, just so it's Mrs. Okay. Anyway, I saw this photo. It was pretty suggestive. Is that genetics? You have some sort of like low angle squat routine to pop that region in that way? I mean, what's going on here, man? Are you smuggling pumpkins? Got a couple of small pumpkins there? Jesus Christ, my heart is beating like crazy right now. Let's talk motorcycles here. Do you ride?
Yeah, a little bit.
What kind of bike do you like to ride?
I mean, anything with two wheels and kickstand, right?
But honestly, that could be anything. I mean, as far as I know, you just described, you know, riding Stephen Hawking through the Nevada desert in the middle of a summer heat wave. He's not going to make it.
Ryan?
Yep.
You want to take a break?
From Blake?
Sure.
That was it.
That was it?
Yeah. But he jumped in and, you know.
Right.
It was very funny. I mean, the clip is all over if you want like a quick 5-minute break from the hard news. And I mean, who, you know, Deadpool.
I am encouraged that people go to the movies again.
Yes.
Did you notice?
A little bit.
Right. I mean, Horizon, I went there.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And then everyone's going to Deadpool.
I'm sure that it's going to be great. I mean, Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman, you can't get any better, right?
Right. I mean, people call him sexy, both sexy men.
I think that's a very fair assessment.
Who are wearing costumes.
And they look very good in them.
Right. As good as you can, but he has a skin problem.
Yes.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.